We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
On the Wolfpack Sports Network from Learfield IMG College.
Play ball!
Welcome to the Nevada Wolfpack Baseball Podcast. Here's your host, Josh Sushon.
Welcome to episode 5 of Running with the Pack. Great to have you with us as we continue this podcast as we celebrate the stories of the University of Nevada Wolfpack baseball team. I'm your host, Josh Sushon. For this week's guest, well, we have head coach TJ Bruce. So TJ, once again, thanks for joining me for this week's edition.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. So TJ, when he got finished with his playing career, he just went right into coaching. But our special guest this week was a teammate of TJ's when they were at Long Beach State. And TJ's teammate continued to play baseball. He got drafted 7th overall in 2005. A little over a year later, he was in the major leagues. He played 13 years in the major leagues, runner-up rookie of the year in 2007, 5-time All-Star, 2-time Gold Glove winner, 2-time Silver Slugger winner. 3 times he finished in the top 8 in MVP voting, one of the best shortstops of his generation. Troy Tulowitzki, thank you so much for doing this, Troy. This means a lot to all of us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, so you guys were teammates at Long Beach State. You guys have been friends ever since. TJ has told me that you guys were in each other's weddings. I want to know when you first met. When was the first time that you met TJ, and what did you think when you see this? I guess he was a little bit older. He's a transfer from Texas Tech. What do you remember about first meeting TJ?
Well, I think I had a little bit of an edge on me because I knew there was this transfer coming in from Tech, and he was a shortstop, so immediately, you know, you go into guard mode maybe a little bit and say, I don't know what this kid's coming here for, but there's no room for him to play. And I think it was a little bit of tough love at first, you know, not giving the guy the time of day. But as it goes on, you see how hard a guy works. He gets your respect. And then, you know, things fell into place, and then we became good friends. It's funny how it all works. But I think that was my initial reaction. That's kind of always been me in a nutshell, a competitor and someone that, you know, even if someone's on my team, they got to earn my respect.
Did you come in thinking, I'm going to take this guy's job?
Yeah, I think that's how it always works, right? You're like, you know, being from Long Beach, I think playing here in the Big 12 and playing at Texas Tech, you had a good year. And you just, you know, it's interesting when you're playing college baseball and being young and naive a lot of times, you don't really know anything about the other side of the world, or you don't know anything really about a few hundred miles down the road from where you're playing from. And So I was going to transfer into Long Beach, and there was no, you know, there was never a, hey, you know, there's a job open. That was never being told from, you know, our head coach who we played for. It was, hey, we have a shortstop. He's a freshman. I think he just finished his freshman year, and they were in the Super Regional. And, hey, you're going to come here, and we need a potential second baseman. We may lose a third baseman. I know there was a guy that may sign or may not. They were kind of on the bubble, and that was really it. So when we first met, I think it was a little bit, you know, you're kind of sizing up your competition on both ends, and you're like, okay, you know, what does this guy do that I can't do? And then we ended up, you know, I think a little bit that summer we ended up working out together at Cerritos Junior College. We took some ground balls where I went to junior college, and I think that was all part, like I told you during the week, that was all part of him just trying to figure out, not that it took him very long to figure out he was a lot better than I was, but I think it's partly him just figuring out, like, hey, okay, who, you know, this guy is this and that, and it ended up being great. It ended up being, we've been through a lot as teammates. Been through a lot, and more importantly, as friends. And now that we're both raising kids together and married, and, you know, we're just on a whole nother level of life now. And now that, you know, we haven't been on the same field since 2005, my undergraduate year and his draft year. So it's been pretty cool, you know, to be on the same field as him and coaching against him. And but more importantly, like I told him the other day, is you just, I just enjoy the friendship. And I think as you go through life, there's only a handful of people that as we talk about, you know, ride or die people. And this guy is for sure one of them. In the drop of a hat, I can go anywhere. I can call him at any time. And I think he feels the same way. So it's good. It's a great, it's a competitive friendship though. You know, we're not afraid of each other. We're pretty honest with each other, but it's all about just getting everybody better. And that's the number one thing I think, you know, I've learned from him over the years is he likes to challenge you, you know, and he likes to challenge you in a lot of ways, whether you're right or whether he thinks you're right or whether he thinks you're wrong. But you know, one of the things that have made him such a great person and a great friend, and then on top of that, the player he was just the challenging aspect and always working to get better. And there again, I think this place at Texas is very fortunate to have him, and so are these players.
I feel like the relationship between a double play tandem is always pretty special, right? The way that you guys have to work together. One of my favorite things to watch in batting practice is just to see the way the guys work, flipping balls this way and working on different throws, different angles. Do you guys have any kind of like just good memories about working together on double plays, whether it's practice or whether it's in a game, of just like a double play that you guys turn where it's just like, yeah, you know, like that's the best, when, especially if it's a late game situation and it's like the game's on the line, you're able to turn two and get out of an inning or anything like that?
I don't really remember one that sticks out. I think overall, when you're just up the middle with someone and that's really good defensively, I think just that pride that you take in, hey, hit us the ball, and that's not the case all the time. But anytime, you know, TJ was there, or just when you have infielders in general that take pride in their defense of taking care of the baseball and making the right decisions, it's fun to take the field with those guys because you know that some good things that can happen, they can change the game, the momentum of a game, and just you don't see it all the time. And I think he's always took pride in his defense, still does as a coach today, and I think I'm the same way, and I think that is hard to find.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it's all about defense. I mean, that's just now it helped me when I was hitting 180, so that I knew it wasn't about offense a whole lot. But I think there again, I think there's a pride thing. There is, you know, you have a chance to change the outcome of a game for nine innings. You know, offensively, you have a chance to change the game. In a high school game, it's three times. In a college game, if you're hitting at the bottom of the order, maybe four times. You know, so I think that's what it's become. I do remember, I don't know if you remember this, we're at Cal State Fullerton in 2004, and Coach Weathers, I don't know what happened. Well, A, I threw the ball. I threw one of the balls away on a backhand ball. I threw it up. I threw it in maybe in the 10th row at Fullerton. And I remember Weaver just staring at the mound, and he's just, you know, he just did his just stare, right? He had the stare. And then I remember Coach Weathers got on us one time because the ball was hit to short, and Troy didn't flip me the ball. Do you remember that at all?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Troy didn't flip me the ball, and Coach Weathers calls us in the dugout, and he goes, you know, in not so many words, what's wrong with you two? You know, are you guys okay? And we're like, no, you know, it's all good. It's fine. But I'm like,
so you just ran to second base instead of flipping in the ball?
I don't know what I do out there sometimes. I go in a different world. So.
And so it was like, you know, you get to the bag and he goes, bag, bag, bag. Oh, okay, I better get out of the way because the freight train's coming. And so, but other than that, it was fun, man. It was, you know, it's funny. A lot of our conversations out there ended up being a lot about the game, but a lot of, like, different things. You know, you just to stay loose and, you know, stay ready. And it was so easy as a newcomer. And even though I was a senior, I was the new guy on the team. So, but to have somebody at shortstop that had their leadership like that, you couldn't help but fall in line. And whatever he said, let's do it. Yeah, whatever, we're ready to roll.
So we are recording this podcast from Austin. Nevada baseball's on the road playing University of Texas, and Troy is now an assistant coach for Texas. And I know that it's now your second year, but and I know just going around college baseball, people are like, really? Troy Tulowitzki is coaching college baseball? I go, yeah, he's coaching college baseball. And they think, well, did he go to UT Austin? I go, no, he went to Long Beach State. So what was it about the college game? There's a lot of things you could have done when your playing career was over. What was it about the college game? What was it about Texas Austin that drew you to want to be here?
Well, I knew that, you know, I wanted a spot where I could raise my family. I think a good place for my son to grow up, and Austin is a great city. We've enjoyed our short time here so much. And then on top of that, I wanted a program that had history, that had a chance to win a national championship. And I think kind of just everything fell in line. Houston Street, who's a really good friend of mine, obviously is a legend here. He played with me in Colorado. That definitely helped me. You know, get some phone calls started with some of the coaching staff, and it kind of just came together. Perfect storm, perfect situation. I've enjoyed every second of it, but, you know, going back to what you said is, I think the people that are close to me and know me, it's of no surprise, but I think from the outsiders looking in, it's definitely kind of, all right, well, is he going to be invested? Why doesn't he just go golf? You know, is he just going to hang out on the lake the whole time? Whatever it is. But the people that know me know that I just love the game. I love the work. I love making kids better. I love a team aspect. All those things are just, you know, the reason why I fell in love with the game. So I'm here all the time, ask the kids, and it's a blast, and I don't know what the future holds for me, but I do, you know, in this present moment, I am really enjoying what I'm doing.
It's funny you mentioned Houston Street. I've known Houston, and he could be a one-man tourism board for the city of Austin, because the number of times that he's told me, you got to go to Austin, you got to try this barbecue place, you got to go to this lake, you got to go to South by Southwest, you got to go to a football game, like, he is just a tourism board for Austin. So when Houston speaks, I can understand why he would deliver not just like the context, but also just hype you up on what a great place it is to live, because he loves this place. And he was a coach last year here too. It wasn't for very long, right, because of the pandemic?
Yeah, he's got, you know, some boys at home, three of them, and he missed some time with them, so I think he wanted to get involved with them. So he's actually coaching my son and one of his sons on an 8U team, doing a great job. So he's right where he needs to be. But even before I played with Houston, Austin was always a place for me that I kind of saw wanting to retire in. I definitely enjoy the lake. I definitely enjoy Texas in general, and I always kind of saw it as a destination that I wanted to get to.
You remember first time Southern California boy going to Texas Tech? Now, Texas Tech's much different here than Austin, but you remember what some of your like initial thoughts, a little fish out of water going to Texas?
Yeah, when you show up with, I think you show up with earrings and some bleached blonde hair in Lubbock, Texas, you stand there a little different, you know, and I think that, but it was good. You know, I had grandparents that lived in Lubbock. You know, they've both passed, but they're both buried. There's the cemetery that they're buried at's in Lubbock. So there was a little bit of history. It wasn't like that was my first time to Lubbock. I went there as a kid. But I didn't have a whole lot of options coming out of junior college. I mean, it was between Oklahoma State and Texas Tech. But nobody really in Southern Cal, they were walk-on positions more than anything else. And so I just saw Tech as as an opportunity to play in a great conference and one of the best conferences arguably in the country in baseball. And I wanted that big environment, and I did want to get away from home. But ultimately, it you know, it was a great experience, but it just wasn't where I was meant to be, and I ended up back in Long Beach at home, probably where I should have just went as a walk-on right out of junior college, but I went.
And then you might have had the starting job that he was going to try and take from you if it wouldn't happen that way.
I might not have made it. I was one of the last guys to get recruited myself, so maybe I wouldn't have made it if he would have done it.
You know, it's really interesting, you know, the way the world works and those things, and, you know, even just you weren't drafted out of high school, Troy, and then 3 years at Long Beach State, and you didn't spend a whole lot of time in the minor league. So I know this might be a little bit of a tough question for you to kind of compare, but just how you developed as a player, as a person in your time at college compared to the short time you had in the minor league. So what that might have been like as an 18-year-old riding a bus and trying to figure things out in the lowest levels of the minors.
Work, simple for me. Everything comes down to work. I mean, pride myself on it. Since I was a player, since I was a young kid, and the same thing we do today with our guys. And I think, you know, when you say work, some people, oh, well, everybody works. But I think there's a different level of work when you can see it. And when you see someone that has it, it sets you apart. So I think I go to Long Beach, wasn't highly recruited, not quite a walk-on, but someone that, hey, we'll give you a chance. And I think I went there with a chip on my shoulder, put my head down, worked my tail off, got some respect from my teammates, started to gain some confidence after my freshman year when I got some opportunity, and then took it to a whole nother level my sophomore and junior year. When I say took it to a whole nother level, I think the weight room was big for me. I think presence was big for me, and I think overall, every time I walked out on the field, I truly believe that I was the best player in the country. Now, if I might not have been, but that's where my mind was, and I think it's, like I said, some people, you know, fake that, and some people really feel that. I really felt that I wasn't going to be stopped. So I think if you can ever get to that point, which is tough to get to, it's a special place. But as I was talking to TJ earlier, it all came from my work, right? The preparation was there. Therefore, my BP was very game-like. Therefore, the game-like didn't feel anything different. My work on ground balls was very game-like, therefore the game never sped up on me. So all that stuff added up, and I just kept on getting around good people, whether it be, you know, Coach Weathers, Coach Buckley, good teammates, Ken Revisa, whoever it is. I just had a whole bunch of people that continually got me better day in and day out. And I had fun at the same time, but nothing got in the way of my work in college. And I think that was definitely my strength. And I felt like I had the recipe going into pro ball to say, hey, I know this is going to be difficult. I know there's some pressure on me being the 7th overall pick. But if I stick true to myself and my work, there's no stopping me. And then it kind of was all over again. You finally get to the big leagues, and now people, well, can you stay in the big leagues? Well, I already had the recipe, I felt like. So then it was, all right, I'm gonna be the best player in Major League Baseball. I'm just going to outwork people. And that's really the key. It sounds simple. It's not, because it's a lot of hours of banging your head against the wall in the cage or whatever it is. But I think that's the difference is, you know, a lot of people saw the good player on the field, but they didn't see all the work that went into it. It was many late nights in the cage, in the weight room. Just every single day working at my craft, literally every single day. I didn't vacation. I didn't do any of that stuff. It was putting your head down and working.
It's so funny because the number of times that TJ, in the 3 months that I've been around him, has said something along the lines of, you work this hard at practice, then it's not a big deal at the game. Because a lot of times I try to bait him, hey, we're playing our rival, hey, it's opening day, is this a big deal? And TJ's like, no, because we practice this way every day, this should not be a big deal, that this is what we do on a daily basis. And it's funny, it's almost like I just heard your voice as Troy was talking about work ethic and how you practice a certain way here.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a lot of, you know, I didn't learn it till later on, really in my life, just knowing his dad and how he is. I mean, that's what Ken is, and Ken's work, he's old school, and he did a hell of a job raising a young man, or not a young man, I mean, at that point, but he's a man now, and, you know, but that's what this guy's all about. It's all about work, and that's partly, you know, I think that's part of our connection. I think there's, we both want to be the best at our craft, whether it was you know, me getting into my career coaching and then him getting into his professional career, it was just all about your work. And we just had the same conversation this morning at breakfast and, you know, about the game. And once the game starts, it's kind of the player's time. It's the player's time to get after the game and take what they've worked on all week and now just perform and let their skill set take over. And that's a lot of what I know Troy mentioned Revisa, but that's a lot about Ken Revisa. That's a lot about the mental game. That's a lot about trust in preparation. And so that's just why we're connected. And still to this day, we're just still challenging each other to get better and work.
A couple of weeks ago on this podcast, TJ and I kind of nerded out about infield defense, playing shortstop, and different fundamentals and different plays and different drills and things like that. TJ got fired up by the end. He was like ready to go take some grounders himself.
I'm waiting for us to go out and take some ground balls. I told Troy, let's go. I'm ready. Unfortunately, I'm 39, and I think my mind says I'm ready, but I know if he put on a glove and I put on a glove, I'd end up catching the balls at first base, and he'd be the one at shortstop taking the ground balls.
Well, what do you look at, Troy, when you look at a shortstop? I mean, obviously there's a lot of things, but do you look at footwork? Do you look at their hands? Do you look at their arm? Do you look at their range? Like, what are some of the main things that you start to look at when you see a shortstop, whether it's a high school kid or whether it's someone who's on the other team? Like, what does one shortstop look at for another shortstop?
The number one thing I'd probably look for is leadership qualities.
Interesting.
You know, that's captain of the, for me, the defense, but people say the infield, but leadership qualities, making guys around you better than they are. I think I always try to take pride in that, and I think that's the first thing. It's almost like a quarterback, you know. You're directing everything out there, taking charge. And then after that, you know, I think the normal stuff would be just like you said, the footwork, the arm. I would say I teach it probably different than anybody. I play it probably different than anybody. So I think I've kind of, you know, carved out my own little way to play shortstop, and I try to teach that to guys. But I don't think it's for everybody. You have to put in a lot of work to play shortstop how I believe it should be played, as far as arm angles and reads and all that stuff. So I wouldn't say I'm by the book at all. I wouldn't say I probably talk about other or things that other people do. I really think I have my own way of teaching it and my own way of playing it.
The knock on great players, whether this is fair or unfair, is that they can't relate to someone who doesn't have the same type of talent that they have. So as you get into coaching, how have you had to adjust, like, okay, there's a throw that I could make, or there's range that I had, but maybe one of the players who I'm working with, maybe he doesn't have that, or maybe he doesn't have that yet. Maybe he's working to get that. How do you go about just working with players who may not have, at this stage in their life, their career, the same physical tools that you had in the major leagues?
That's a tough question. I'll probably get myself in trouble here with kind of my answer, but to me, that's not a knock on the coach. It's a knock on the player, right? Because I view the game and my work ethic at the highest of levels, and I know where I came from. I was that kid one day that was not very good, let's say, but I got myself good. So I already know what it takes. So I know every guy on our team, right, can get to my level, but are they willing to put in that work? And I think sometimes where elite athletes get in, or people start to say that, whether it be a Tony Gwynn, whatever it is, they know where the kid can go, but the kid doesn't know that he can get there. So they start to, the easy way out is say, well, I can't relate to him. He's so hard on me, whatever it is. I think you got to look at it the other way and say, if you ever want to be great, you got to be doing what that guy is teaching. Otherwise, you're never going to make it. And my goal to as a coach is to really get these kids to understand, you can be a great player, you can be a big leaguer, I'm going to challenge you, but most kids don't take on that challenge, therefore they back down and say, well, that guy's just crazy. He loves the game so much, and I just really don't love it. Well, then what are you playing it for? Why are you here, right? And that's some of my conversations that go on. Like I said, not everybody's going to like that answer, but I think the ones that do tap into their potential and really understand work, they will thank you for making them better.
Let's talk about favorite play to make as a shortstop defensively. I think I think about the ball in the hole, you know, and whether you're going to backhand, plant, throw, whether you're going to jump in the air to first, the play that Jeter made famous, the play that you made, run around it, throw off, you know, from a different arm slot, up the middle, like what are some of your guys' just like favorite plays that you know, just in general that you like to make at shortstop?
I like taking care of the baseball, honestly. I've been a big fan of fielding percentage my entire life, of taking care of the baseball. I looked at my fielding percentage even when I was a high school player, right? And I followed it all the way to the big league. So I wanted to have the highest fielding percentage ever in the history of the game. That was always my goal, one of my goals that I never told anybody, mm-hmm. right? It still eats at me today that Omar Vizquel has me by like a tenth of a point in the history of the game. So when I go into that, right, I take pride in taking care of the baseball, right? So it's not about the flashy plays always for me, even though as I developed as a player, I had some flashy plays in me, but I love guys that just take care of the baseball in the middle of the field. And that's hard to find.
Mm-hmm. Remember Justin Sellers? He didn't have a long career in the major leagues, but Justin was with me in Albuquerque. He's really good defensively, and I remember asking him, what's your favorite play to make? And he said the routine play.
Yeah.
The play that your teammates expect you to make, the ball, when it gets hit to you, the pitcher goes, it's an out. He goes, that's my favorite play to make, the routine play, because that's where it has to start, is the routine play.
Justin Sellers is a character. I have a good story about Justin Sellers. So we were playing the Dodgers, and he's kind of, at this point in time, he had a little bit of time in the big leagues, and he asked me for a signed bat. So I sent it over, signed it to him. Hey, great watching you play. Sign it, whatever. And he's one of the only players that ever sent me a bat back.
Really?
Yeah. And what am I going to do with a Justin Sellers bat? I'm going to put it next to my Pedroia bat or something like that, right? But I actually have it in my room. I have a Justin Sellers bat, and he signed it to me to one great shortstop from another.
I love it.
It's one of my favorite bats that I have, but definitely every time people go in my bat room, they say, who is Justin Sellers?
Yeah. No, I love that because that comes back to presence, right? Yeah. Walking out on the field and feeling like you're the best player. Maybe you are, maybe you're not. And knowing Justin Sellers, I'm not surprised one bit by that story at all because he is a character. But that's about presence. I love that. From one great shortstop to another.
So if I sign my bat, my aluminum bat, we put in your
any your bat, any bat is welcome in there, and I love bats, so I'll take any bat that anybody has. So.
I'm going to sign my fungo after tonight's game.
Perfect. I'll take it. I love bats.
Have you seen the way he hits a fungo? He can hit a fungo. It's unbelievable.
He's hit me a lot of fungo. So, okay. Yeah, definitely. Seen. I've seen the way he throws BP, and I've seen the way he hits a fungo. Yeah.
We spent some time. Doing some fungal work. I remember there's a story you talk about work. So it's I don't know. It's still he's still in Colorado. Anyways, I ended up going out there and I spent 10 days there. It was great. I spent 10 days and training and you know he's so I think I'm going for vacation. I was married but I had no kids. And I think I'm going on vacation. Well, sure enough, I've never been in altitude before. I'm still living in Long Beach at this time, and I end up going to Colorado, and I'm training in Coors Field with him, and I'm like, this is not what I signed up for. I didn't sign up for this, and we're running the warning track, and we're doing some different things, and I'm like, this is miserable. So I think I end up like, I just ended up sitting up in the stand somewhere, and then I just started watching from that. I tried one time about, you talk about work, I tried one time, and I'm like, this is why the game checked me right after college and said, you're done. That's a funny story.
Do you remember just being kind of a fanboy of your old teammate and just seeing, especially when the Rockies made that run, that Rocktober run in 2007 and watching what they did?
I do. I think, you know, you talk about love and you know, I think him and I are a little bit of the same in that way. I think we love hard. I think we're loyal. I think we love hard to a degree. And I specifically remember him going through the draft. And I remember 2005, I was done playing for a year. I was an undergrad. I just remember that whole process. If you remember, Troy, we went out and bought the draft day Jeters. Remember the draft day Jeter shoes? Jeter had this shoe. We bought him. He's in NorCal with his family, and I'm in Southern Cal. But I do remember just that run. I remember the 07 run. I was very fortunate and thankful for him. He actually flew me out for the last, I don't know, I was probably there for the last two series. I didn't stay for the Padres play-in game. But the Diamondbacks was the last series, and they had to win to get into the play-in game. And I was there for that. Followed the whole run. I mean, you're right. I was a fanboy, and but you just beam with pride knowing like that's not only just your ex-teammate, but that's a true friend. Whether he was playing in Major League Baseball or not. It's hard this day and age in the world. It's really hard for people to be happy for other people. And I was truly happy, and I felt going through it with him. I mean, all the way through his career. I mean, I tried to watch. I mean, my life a lot of times revolved around college baseball and watching where he was playing, whether it was with Colorado. You know, I have a funny, not a funny story, but I remember when he got traded to Toronto, I told the Rockies, I'm not a Rocky anymore either. So I told all the scouts, I'm out. Don't call me for information. I'm not a Rocky anymore. You know, but my loyalty is to him. And but following his journey and my kids, you know, Rowan the most. You know, he's the godfather to my oldest, Rowan. She's 11. And she just loved watching him play. I mean, she would, hey, is Uncle Troy playing tonight? How did he do tonight? And then as she got older, she started learning these iPhones, and she can check a box score, and she doesn't know what the box score means, but she can say, oh, they won. You know, that was her big deal. Hey, Uncle Troy won. But it was great, man. I felt like I had a lot of me lived through him, the big league life to a degree, but it was just so cool to see him go through all these milestones. And I mean, I think he's a Hall of Fame player. I've always been on record with that, I'll die saying the same thing. I think he's one of, if not one of, the best shortstops to ever play Major League Baseball. So it was a treat to watch him play and just watch him work and compete and make those teams go.
I want to get sidetracked just for a brief moment because I don't want to forget to bring up another member of the Nevada coaching staff who's from Long Beach State, who is a teammate of yours, Troy, and that is Abe Alvarez, lefty, who had a fabulous career with the Dirtbags and made it to the major leagues. Just when you hear the name Abe Alvarez, what do you think about the man and the pitcher that you were teammates with?
Well, I go back to, you know, every time he made a start, and you don't feel this way all the time when guys take the mound as starters, but he felt like we got a good chance to win tonight. And what that takes is preparation, focus, and someone that's going to go out there and give you everything they got. And Abe was that every, whether it be Friday night, Saturday, he was that guy where you felt very comfortable. I always talk about, you know, guys that are kind of there's different words for them, but let's just say it's like head sleepers. Like, and no matter what happens, you can go home and put your head on the pillow and be, hey, we went out with our best. And Abe was always that guy where whether we won or lost, you knew you had someone that gave it everything you got. Whereas sometimes you have guys where, you know, they blow a lead and it's like, man, that guy, he didn't earn the right to be in the game. And there's a lot of players like that. So I think that's the utmost respect that I can pay Abe is this. Every time as a shortstop, when he took the mound, I think he gave us the best chance to win because he gave us everything he had.
Knowing those two guys when they were college students, college athletes, are you surprised or are you not surprised that both Abe and TJ got into coaching when their careers were done?
Not surprised with Abe, surprised.
Okay.
Yeah, and no, that's no disrespect to any of that. It's just when I remember Abe, he worked hard at the field, but I don't think he was someone that maybe would go home and unless it was maybe a Dodger game, but he's not going to, you know, tune in and check every box score where, you know, I think TJ would definitely followed the game a little bit more and knew maybe some more players. And then, you know, me, I was always into that stuff. So It's crazy how it works, but it was fun talking to them. I'm glad they're together. I think they make each other better, and I'm excited to see where both of their careers go from here.
It's got to be fun, too, when it's just someone who you've known for a long time, where you guys can say anything to each other, and you know that it's like, okay, whether it's tough love or whether it's just respect, or it's like, no, we can challenge each other when the time comes, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as Troy said, you know, there's a level of trust. And I think that takes time too. You know, I don't think trust is earned, or I don't think trust is just given. I think it's earned, obviously, and that takes time. But it's nice to have guys around you that aren't afraid, you know, to challenge you in different spots. I think sometimes as a competitor, you always want to be challenged, you know, a little bit more. I feed off of that. I kind of feed off the guy telling me I'm wrong, or the guy telling me I can't coach, or this and that. So you know, you'd like that a little bit more, and in the right time, in the right settings. But yeah, to have somebody like Abe, who's played at the highest level, who's had success. I mean, he was one of the greatest pitchers to walk through Long Beach State. You know, and that's saying a lot to have that success at this level. And then obviously Buck, to have somebody of Buck's caliber, I don't think you get that in an assistant coach a whole lot. You know, a former head coach, a guy that has this long resume, but to have, you know, guys like that on your staff, I think that's a big deal. One day, we'll, Troy and I will be together somewhere one day, and that's always, we always talk about it. It's always.
Who's coaching the infielders if you guys are together that
I'll
day?
I'll turn it over. I'll let him do it.
And it don't matter to me. There's no ego here. We right. both probably teach some similar things.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if that were to ever happen, I mean, right? I mean, both of us.
Yeah.
Right? Right. And we got to make the players the best they possibly can be. And he might explain things better than me in some areas, and I might be better in other areas. But they'd be lucky.
So we're recording this between games 1 and 2 of the series. How much during last night's game, I say last night because that's how we were recording this, would you guys kind of look over at the dugout and think like, okay, is there like a call that someone is doing, or they have like a hand gesture that's saying something, or I can kind of steal something?
Well, he actually has some responsibilities during the game, see? I mean, not only was he running the offense, he was calling pitches, positioning, doing everything, right? I just work with our hitters pretty much and our infielders, and I kind of just sit there and watch a game, and I have a lot more to just evaluate and see how it's going. But I'm not running the offense. I'm not calling pitches. I'm not doing any of that. I just help our hitters put together a game plan and really just behind the scenes work. So we're in completely different areas of this, to where, you know, I was on top of everything. You know, I know every move he made because that's where my eyes are. Mm-hmm. So I'd probably say some things that kind of freak him out, to be honest, with how much I was seeing things.
Yeah. How much just watching his team for 9 innings did you – like, what did you just think of just, like, their presence, the way they went about it? How much did you see, like, TJ's personality in the guys that were out there at all?
I mean, after the game, you can ask him. First thing I said, hey, heck of a job, man. I think he put his team in a great position to win a game. We were
stupid
lucky.
Replay.
You know, we were lucky to win that game. We really shouldn't have, to be honest. And that's unfortunate for him, fortunate for us. But I think he put his team in position. Every move he made probably was the right move. Now, that doesn't happen all the time in this game. But I think he pressed the right buttons, brought in the right bullpen arms. Obviously, the pitch outs. How many times do you see two pitch outs where guys get thrown out? You barely ever see that in the game. It was a well-executed, I think, game plan on their part. The pitchers, you know, did their own. Probably he would say they walked a little bit too many guys, but at the same time, I thought they came into what can be, maybe not in the COVID world, but it can be in a tough environment or a big environment for kids from Nevada to play at the University of Texas. I thought they handled that well, so that goes into the mental game, and I thought they were prepared. You know, the thing that's perplexing to me that I asked him is just saying, man, I really liked your team. I like them moving forward, but at the same time, where do you think your issues have came from with some of the maybe close losses? You know, that's what I try to help him with, as well as if he ever watched us on TV, our team, I would want the same thing. Hey, what do you see in our team? And I'm sure after these two games that we play, we might share some notes on each other's teams and go through some things. But at the end of the day, we're friends. I'm trying to help his team be the best they possibly can because of the players, right? It's about the kids. It's definitely about him, but for me, it's always about making the kids better.
TJ, you think he stole your signs? He just kind of hinted at something. Do you think that you got to change your signs tonight?
No, I'm sure there's something for sure. I mean, going back to the original part, yeah, you know, you look up a little bit because I know, obviously, I just know the competitor he is, and we're friends, and we're good friends, and we'll be lifelong friends, but I mean, he wanted to beat me, and I wanted to beat him. I mean, that's the bottom line. But I was watching a little bit, and you know, we had a runner at second base, and you know, we had a base stealer, obviously, and I was kind of watching just to see, you know, what would he do if he was playing, and then how can he relay it to those guys? And they start hammering. It was Jake Stinson, I believe, and he started hammering the runner, and I'm sure more times than not, he knew exactly in the general area that I was thinking to do certain things, and whether it's hold the ball or whether it's hold and pick, quick pitch, quick. I mean, you know, that's just baseball. That's just I think for him and I, just from where we come from, I don't want to say it's common sense, but I think it's part of the game. I think that's the only way that we know the game is to do it that way. And so, yeah, like you said, we'll share some notes, I'm sure, afterwards. And we discussed a lot of things this morning, just on different things, just more on myself, more where can I get better? You know, I think, as I've told him over this course of the season, I don't understand why our team is 10-14. I don't. I don't have a grasp on it. I don't know why we're 7-8 in our league. And he mentioned the same thing last night at the end of the game. He goes, I just don't know. I don't understand. You know, I've seen the box scores. I finally saw you in person. You know, so and that falls on me, and that's an area that I got to go and get help with, and it all falls on me, and I got good people around me to challenge me to make me better, and that's, and we'll talk after, you know, probably at some point on the flight home tomorrow. I'm mm-hmm. sure we'll break it down before the weekend.
Might be too premature to ask this, but how long do you want to keep coaching? Do you want to be a head coach? How much are you enjoying this?
I mean, I definitely will never leave the game of baseball, so I'll be doing something in some capacity, whether that's at the college level, the big league level, my son's level, mm-hmm. whatever it may be. I'll be in the game, or if I'm not in the game, I promise you, find a local cage around here or a baseball field, and I'll be somewhere close to that. It's just what I do.
How often do you actually take swings yourself?
All the time. The other day, my back, I don't know what I did to it. I had some sciatic nerve that was giving me some issues, but yeah, I hit all the time still. Shoot, my players want me to make a comeback when they see me in the cage, but I say there's no chance of that. I'm enjoying what I'm doing too much. I love the college game. I really like the big league game too, so I don't know. I really keep my – I try to stay, you know, kind of right here, right now, but at the same time, I do got to put some thought into it. It's a tough question, but I'll be doing something in the game.
You know Glenn Ellen Hill.
He
was our manager.
I love
G. Hill. And about once a year, maybe twice a year, he would get in the cage to take batting practice. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, he hit some of the longest home runs of all time. I mean, he put one on the roof at Wrigley Field. And now, at his age, he would just have the most basic, easy swing, like he was hitting a fungo. And it's 425, 450, out of Isotopes Park, off the scoreboard. And guys, their mouths would just drop at just watching this man take the most simple, basic swing and just launch it. So how much, when you take BP, are you just having fun because it's fun to hit? And how much of it is, okay, this is what I do to kind of instruct my guys about, like, this is my hands or you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, first to go back to G. Hill, that was the best hitting coach I've ever had in my entire career. I've learned more from G. Hill than I've learned from anybody in my entire life. So,
what were some of the things?
We'd be here all day, but I think, you know, for me, what he made me realize is he had always said that, you know, I was basically a Ferrari, meaning I'm a go-getter, I'm always on attack. That was his way of explaining it, and he had to back me down and turn me into more of like a Cadillac in the box, move slower, not try to hit the ball 500 feet that a nice easy swing can work, those sort of things. So he's the one that kind of got this kid that takes these crazy wild swings, tries to use strength, and got me to a spot where the way he would just talk to me, right? My whole life, my dad would challenge me and yell at me and be on top of me. And he was the first coach that whenever he talked to me, he talked a lot slower, mm-hmm. a lot more methodical, and a lot more at ease. The only other person that's ever talked to me like that with the game of baseball would be Revisa. And it puts you in a calming, you know, a calming space. And then this game, when it's moving fast, you need that calming presence at times. So his voice, just hearing the way he would talk to me, helped me become a better player because I spent a lot of time in the cage with him. So those are still methods that I use till this day, right? If I feel like I have a kid that I call a Ferrari, I'm going to try to calm him down. Mm-hmm. And then I have other kids that I need to get on because I need some intent and focus.
Yeah.
But those are just some of the things. But just my swing. He made my swing. He made my swing from the start of it. I mean, I was in the cage crying to him, literally crying, saying, I don't know what I'm doing. And this is already I'm in the minor leagues. And he would sit down and talk with me every day, and he taught my swing, right? From my toe tap to everything I did, he taught me. So I thank him a lot, and I hope he realizes how much I appreciate him.
I'll send him a text to make sure that he knows.
Yeah, he knows. I still talk to him all the time and ask him questions. But
I called him, like, the hitting coach whisperer.
Yeah.
Because he just talks so calm, quietly, you know, never raises his voice.
Yeah.
And guys swear by him.
Yeah, he's the best. But to go back to your original question, when I grab a bat, honestly, I think the one thing I want the kids to watch, and I think they've got it, and I think if that's my advantage in coaching, it's the fact that they could see me. Right, they could see me work. And I don't think I don't teach them my swing, I don't do whatever, but I think they see the intent that I work with, and they see the focus and how locked in I am, and then I think that really, really helps them. Because I promise you, and anybody that knows me, if I get on the field today and were to take BP, I mean, if I hit a pop-up, I'm not going to like it, right? And there's a lot of people that hit pop-ups, and they don't hold themselves to a high standard, and they like it, or it doesn't bother them. I strive for perfection in my BP and my fielding, and I think that's what they see when I grab a bat. Not my swing, not maybe my results, is, wow, coach can really just flip that switch and get locked in. And I think that's always been my strength, and for them to see that, I think helps. They've mentioned that to me, so I think that's probably my biggest, hopefully I'll try to hit for the rest of my life, mm-hmm. just because I think that helps our guys a lot.
Another thing that he just said that makes me think of you, TJ, is angry when you pop up. So you have a thing for your players during batting practice. If they don't hit it out of the cage, you're done. You got to get out, right? Or if you hit a lazy fly ball, you guys have certain rules about, no, you only get to stay in the cage if you have a productive swing. If you don't hit it out of the cage, then get out of the cage.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of, it goes back to in my recruiting process, you know, coming up in this college game as a known recruiter. I think part of it is going to see the kids learn how to take BP, you know. And I think, you know, it's too many times it's become okay just to. Now there's a difference, right? When you're working on something or when you're doing this, there's something to that. But you know, we're trying to create an environment to be ready to hit when you get in the cage, and I have a really hard time, and my lack of patience gets to me when you, especially when you come from the cage group to the main diamond. So, but we're trying to teach, use the whole. The big part of the field. We're trying to teach stay behind the ball. We're trying to teach slow is smooth, and you're trying to teach all these things, and then you're not being ready to hit, or when you take the first pitch, and it's like, okay, you know, I throw pretty good BP. I already know that. So it's going to be a strike. So let's, you know, and it's just part of getting them mentally and ready to go, and understanding that they're not major league players. They're not making $10-15 million a year. They need to be ready to compete, and it always stems back to that.
Well, you guys have both been very generous with your time, so let's wrap it up here. But just kind of final thoughts about either one of you guys can go first about just like, you know, how long you guys have known each other and friendship and baseball and kind of what it all means here.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we met as kids. You know, I mean, I was 21 and I think he was 19 or 20. And just to kind of see him in his career, what he's done professionally, but what he's done, you know, the most important imprint he'll ever leave is on his family and the people close to him. And that's truly what you always be remembered by. And I know he knows how much I care about him. He knows how I feel about him. But the imprint that he's left, that he keeps leaving on people around him, is gigantic. And he's an impactful person. He's a loving person. He's a loyal person. And I'm just very fortunate to have him in my life, really. And there's nobody, you know, there's nobody else I would want to be a godfather to my kids, to Rowan, than him. And I think he knows that. And we'll always have a special bond. And I'm looking forward to getting older and wiser with him.
Yeah, for me, I think just, you know, I think we get caught up in this whole game of baseball. And when you really sit back and look at it, you know, this is bigger than baseball. It's relationships. It's making people better. It's being there for them through their tough times. And I think I've tried to be that guy for him, and I know he's been that guy for me. But to go back to, like, when you said, you know, was he a fanboy or whatever, really, you know, what I've always known in my career is, like, if I was just playing in Major League Baseball, if I just did it for myself, I would have never made it, right? It's all those people that impacted you in your whole career, right? So he made me a better player just by showing up to the game, because I knew I represented him because how much he liked me. So I think when you understand that and you play for a bigger purpose, whatever that may be, you know, it could be different for different people, but for me, it's always been family and friends. Is I felt like they always took the field with me when I played. Now, if I went out there and played for my selfish reasons, it wouldn't have worked out for me. But I've always tried to play for other people, and I don't think maybe he's heard that before, or people in general get that. But I think it's huge to understand that piece in this game, to be the best player you can possibly be. Don't make it about yourself, right? Make it about other people, and they'll take you. That will take you to heights you never knew were possible. And I think for me now, that's still my friendships, but it's my son. He saw me play a little bit, but I'm a better coach because of my son every day. Because of every one of those players, I treat him like my son. And when you can look at it like that, and not yourself, I think you can get the best out of yourself and the best out of your players.
That's an awesome way to end it. That's fantastic, both of you. Once again, you guys were very generous with your time. Really enjoyed this. Thank you so much, both of you.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem. Thanks, Jeff.
Once again, this was Episode 5 of Running with the Pack. I'm your host, Josh Sushon. We'll talk to you again next week.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 20 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.